we inform.
Religious freedom is about people of faith being able to live out their faith, live out their convictions, no matter where they are.
We equip.
Sacred honor is the courage to speak truth, to live out your free speech.
We also rejoice in our sufferings because we know that suffering produces perseverance, perseverance character, and character hope.
This is At the Core on American Family Radio.
Welcome to The Core here on American Family Radio. Glad to be with you today on the program. We're live. Walker Wildman in studio with you one day out to the election, technically less than 24 hours out before Election Day begins and voting begins on Election Day. Over 70 million votes have already been cast over the last several weeks in various states around the country. So we'll talk about that and much, much more today. Rick Green is live with us as well. We're going to be hosting the show today. Rick, welcome back to The Core.
Hey, man, looking forward to today. I cannot believe we are 24 hours out, bro. Well, I guess, 30 hours out from polls closing.
Yeah.
But still, we're here.
There. Yeah, we're there. That's right. And I was out a little bit last week, Thursday and Friday. So many of you heard our announcement earlier in the year of our fifth child, Elizabeth, our first girl. She was born on Wednesday at 2:51 p.m. on the 30th. So
congrats, man. And by the way, you've outdone me now. See, I got four. But I got four grandkids too, so you got some catching up to do, bro.
Yeah, and you got three boys and a girl, right?
Yep,
I thought so.
Now you got four boys and a girl.
I know, right?
You will also experience the queen and her subjects.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, she's going to be running the show. There's no doubt. If she's not already now. Yeah,
she
my
is
favorite
darling,
my
by
favorite
the way.
Thing.
I saw a picture.
Thank you. My favorite thing is the brothers fighting over who's going to hold her.
Oh, that's great.
So,
that's great.
So yeah, we're enjoying it, and the children are a blessing of the Lord, and that's what the scripture says. And so we'll actually talk about that today with some news stories regarding America's declining birth rate. So we'll talk about that, Rick, in a little while. Before we jump to all the nitty-gritty news stories of the day and talk all things election, we wanted to make sure we cover some key dates when it comes to charitable giving and donating to American Family Association towards the end of the year. We're already in November. Chelsea Wildman is with us, my sister-in-law. She's also works with my sister Riley in the AFA Foundation. They handle charitable gift annuities, IRAs, stock donations, all things giving to AFA. So, Chelsea, welcome back to the studio.
Thank you so much for having me, Walker.
Well, before we go over a couple of these dates that are important, we're already in November. It's crazy to think that we only have less than 60 days until the end of the year. But give us a brief kind of overview of your hallmark offering, which is the charitable gift annuity. You offer many more options as well. But the CGA is very popular, so just give us a brief overview of what that is for supporters.
Yes, so our charitable gift annuity is a gift to American Family Association, and in exchange, a donor will receive a fixed income for life. That income percentage is based on how old they are at the time that they give the gift, as well as when they start to receive it. So obviously, the longer you wait to receive that income, it would be a higher percentage for you. You do get some wonderful tax benefits, a partial tax deduction the year that you put the gift in place, as well as a partial tax-free income. So part of your income, you do not have to count on your taxes, which is a blessing.
Wow. So it's a great option for people in their retirement discussion, right?
Absolutely. Yes. We like to say about 10% of your overall portfolio should be thought out and planned out into a charitable gift annuity. Yes, and we would love for AFA to be the recipient of that.
Yes, AFA would be the recipient, and Uncle Sam would get less money, pretty
Absolutely.
Much.
Absolutely, and so, we want that to happen.
Yes, so it's a win-win.
Yes, yes. Once the donor passes away, any remaining funds, if they have not been paid out to that annuitant, would then be gifted to AFA.
Excellent. So charitable gift annuity, folks, many of you who are thinking about retirement or planning about retirement or maybe right in the middle of it, you've probably heard an annuity discussed before, but AFA offers a great charitable gift annuity, and I can say this with pretty much certainty. AFA has one of the, if not the longest, strongest charitable gift annuity pools of funds anywhere in the country. We operate 100% of the charitable annuity pool. Those who study this know what I'm talking about. It's growing, right? It's snowballing, and we're not dipping into it to pay for expenses. We're not even paying for annuity funds to be dispersed from that. So it's just growing. It's a very strong pool of funds with our charitable gift annuity. Chelsea, one other thing, and the main reason I wanted to have you on is give us some of these dates. We have CGAs, but there's also several other ways to give to AFA and to the AFA Foundation. So give us some of these ways to give and some of the dates.
Yes, absolutely. So as we know, the end of the year is coming. We want to get these tax, deductible donations in. Outright gifts, that is the last on our totem pole, and we can accept those as long as they're postmarked by the 31st. So December 31st, that's going to be your deadline. But that sooner when is going to be any real estate gifts. That's going to be November the 15th. IRAs, whether they would like to use their IRA for a charitable gift annuity, that is a newer piece of our portfolio offerings, so to speak.
So you can roll over the IRA into a CGA, correct?
Yes, as long as donors are 70 and a half or above. Okay. Yes, yes. So any IRAs, they can roll over into that 70 and a half or above. And then, of course, any qualified charitable distributions have a deadline of December 9th as well. So anything within that IRA sphere, we really want to see come into us by December. And that's simply because all of these companies get inundated with requests at the end of the year.
And there's paperwork involved.
Absolutely.
And then the last one is the outright stock donations. Many people don't know this. Many do because they donate their stock to AFA, but we do accept outright stock donations, correct?
Yes, absolutely. You can outright gift, as you mentioned, a stock donation. Maybe, a stock is not performing as well, or maybe you just want that particular stock out of your portfolio. You can transfer that to us, and then we would then provide a tax deductible receipt for that. Folks also can use their stocks to fund a charitable gift annuity as well if they wanted to turn that into income.
Okay, excellent. A lot of different options, folks. If you're listening, you support our work, you love listening to AFR, a lot of different options to donate and to support our culture transforming work. Chelsea, thanks so much for coming in.
Thank you, Walker. And we invite anyone that has questions about any of these options to just give us a call.
Excellent.
Our phone number is 1-800-326-4543, extension 345, and our team would love to speak with you.
All right, and afafoundation.net.
Yes.
Is that right? Excellent. All right. Thanks, Chelsea.
Thank you.
Appreciate you. That's Chelsea Wildman with the AFA Foundation, 800-326-4543, extension 345, 800-326-4543, extension 345, or afafoundation.net. Well, Rick, tell us what you've been up to.
This is a tough decision, man. Tough decision. Would you rather federal bureaucrats spend your money or AFR invest that money into saving the nation? I mean, this is a really tough call. I gotta think for a minute.
When you frame it like that, Rick, it's a no-brainer. Right?
I need to do my cost-benefit analysis, get out all the pros and cons, because the Department of Education does such a good job, the Center for Demented Confusion. I mean, that's where we want all of our money going, right? No, of course not. We want our money to go to American Family Association so they can do some good with it.
Exactly.
I didn't realize. So you can do – I'm sorry. I know you got other stuff you want to talk about, but I thought Chelsea did such a great job. There's so many cool ways to do this and to literally invest in the future for your children and grandchildren. And a lot of times we think of, just an inheritance that goes directly to them. And of course we want to do that as well. But in this way, you're basically preserving freedom and preserving the culture and investing in the culture for your kids and grandkids. So what a great way to do that. And you can, like Chelsea was saying, you can actually set that up to where you still get some income off of it in retirement, and yet you're helping to do all the good work at American Family Association at the same time. So very cool.
Yeah, a lot of neat options there, a lot of ways to give. Of course, outright cash gifts are the most common, and that's what everybody knows about. But yeah, there's stock donations, IRAs, real estate gifts, all kinds of different ways to give to AFA as we head into the end of the year. So we'll publish this deadline sheet on our Facebook page, get it out there for our audience. Rick, this is we're as we mentioned, we're under 24 hours out from the election, and then as you said, about 30 hours out thereabouts in the ballpark before polls close. Give us, we've got some specific stories we're going to kind of run through, but the one that seems to be the driver when it comes to turnout and what is driving people to vote the way they are is the economy, the economy, the economy. Rick, I've said before, the economy is the one thing that hasn't gotten better, right? They can say, oh, inflation's gone down, which means it's just growing slower. But the reality is that the consumer, the American consumer, still has extremely low confidence and is still suffering under Bidenomics. Wouldn't you agree that that's going to motivate people come tomorrow?
Yeah, I feel like it's, you know, deja vu all over again, as Yogi Berra would have said, you know, 1992, Bill Clinton, the whole campaign, it's the economy, stupid. They had those signs all over their campaign offices, and it feels very, very similar to that, you know, especially because this cuts across, you know, doesn't matter party, doesn't matter, you know, what you, your parents, how they voted, all of that. I mean, this is literally people voting their pocketbook and voting for what's happening to their small businesses, to their jobs, just to their ability to buy at the grocery store. So whether you're Republican, Democrat, Libertarian, Green Party, you know, whether you're Christian, Muslim, whether you're secular, whatever, this issue cuts across all of those things. And I think, Walker, that's why we're seeing these massive shifts in these voting blocks that, you know, used to the Democrats could take, you know, take for granted and, mm-hmm. and just assume that they had. And now all of a sudden you're seeing massive shifts in the Black community, the Hispanic community. I mean, it's across the board. So
yeah,
I think this will be the most, and of course in the Rust Belt states that everybody's really paying attention to, Pennsylvania and Wisconsin. I mean, those, you know, people are really concerned. Democrats are very concerned in Pennsylvania. Republicans see a huge opportunity there.
Yeah.
And I think it's driven by exactly what you just mentioned.
Yeah, and I've got some pretty interesting numbers we'll go through in the next segment just to break it down. I got a few clips as well as far as this early voting turnout. But, Rick, to your point, urban America has really suffered under Biden and Harris. And not only the economy, but to pair that the economy with the mass immigration, the mass illegal immigration, and the literal dumping of 10, 20, 50,000 illegal immigrants in these cities. Some of these small towns, I mean, they're doubling the population. There may be a town of 4,000 people, and they're bringing in 4,000 illegal immigrants.
Yeah.
You talk about a strain on infrastructure. And then these inner-city voters, they're furious because they might be lifelong Democrats, but when they see that their police department stretched thin, their fire department stretched thin, their kids can't go to school because they're closing down the gymnasium so they can house illegal immigrants— at the welfare resources are being absolutely swallowed by the illegal immigrants in their local community. I mean, this is, Rick, this is driving inner city voters away from the Democrats. There is no doubt about that, including young men.
Yeah.
Young inner city men are having trouble finding jobs. Why? Because the illegal immigrants are getting the jobs. I mean, this is going to be the story of this of this 2024 cycle,
it's Rick. I don't know if it's trifecta. What would you say for four items? Fourfecta?
Yeah, I wasn't good at math, so don't ask me.
But it's the economy. It's the massive illegal immigration, and then it's the crazy transgender stuff that is causing a lot of these people, even on the Democrat side, to say this has gone too far.
Yeah.
And then just the incompetence of the Democrat ticket and the unwillingness to do interviews and all those things that ultimately finally pushed, you know, the big boys, Elon Musk and Robert F. Kennedy and all these other people over to the Republican side. So it's those four things I think are the big things that it's, you know, like a perfect storm that's just piling on and making it very, very difficult for the Democrats.
Yeah. Well, to your point, Rick, I've got a Megyn Kelly clip in the next segment where she was talking to Bill Maher about the trans insanity, specifically with our children. We'll play that. That's driving voters to the polls. We've also got clips on immigration, on mass deportations, whether that's a practical solution or not. We've got all those clips coming up in the next two segments. It's At the Core. Walker Wildman, Rick Green's with us today as well. We're live on this Monday edition, November 4th. Tomorrow is Election Day, and I've got three words for you. Vote, 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 and take as many people with you as possible. We'll be back in a few.
At the Core podcast are available at AFR.net. Now, back to At the Core on American Family Radio.
Hey, Marty. Welcome back to The Core here on American Family Radio. I was talking to Marty and my mic was hot. I was going to tell Marty to make my mic hot. The irony is my mic was hot when I went to tell him. So, Rick, it's the world of live radio. And
yeah, at least you didn't have one of those hot mic moments, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, like telling like, yeah, like, Marty, when I come back, you know, after the break, you know, we need to make sure, da-da-da-da-da. Well, hey, my motto, Rick, is with the whole era of the, like, the mass surveillance state that we live in.
Yeah.
My motto is basically don't say anything that you wouldn't want broadcast.
The mic is always hot, right?
Yes.
You just assume the mic is hot, even if the mic's not there.
Exactly.
The mic is somewhere in the room or
that's
on the
right.
phone or whatever. Yep.
Be careful
I
what
agree,
you
bro.
Say. Hey, welcome back to The Core. Rick and I are both with you live. It's pre-election day, November 4th. We're going to be doing election night coverage here on AFR tomorrow, beginning at 6 p.m. Central, so you won't want to miss that. Rick, but jumping back into these stories that have really driven the election, I'm going to play a clip here on this was Tom Holman. He was a former, I believe he was a former Customs and Border Patrol chief under President Trump. I think he worked with ICE for a period as well. He may have held a formal position over at Immigration and Customs Enforcement. Nonetheless, he's been pretty much the go-to when it comes to what's a conservative position on immigration. And the left keeps pulling this, you know, what are you going to do with families card? They did this when Trump was there in his first term, and they try to pull this guilt trip where people start backing away from deportations because we don't know what to do with the families, even though the number of families is actually very small. Most of these kids are smuggled in through cartels and other means. But nonetheless, Tom Holman gave pretty much the most humane response, and that is that we deport the families together in the name of unity. Clip one.
We have seen one estimate that says it would cost $88 billion to deport a million people a year.
I don't know if that's accurate or not.
Is that what American taxpayers should expect?
What price do you put on our national security? Is that worth it?
Is there a way to carry out mass deportation without separating families?
Of course there is. Families can be deported together.
There you go. That's Tom Holman, Rick. That's a simple response, Rick. I mean, if the families, if one of the parents are being deported, then you deport the children too with a family unit. That way they stay together. Doesn't that sound humane and compassionate?
Man, just it makes perfect sense. And you know, I loved how he handled that interview. I wasn't familiar with him. What'd you say his job is? Because I saw clips of this.
Yeah, Tom Holman, he worked with ICE, Immigration and Customs Enforcement, and basically he worked under the Trump Department of Homeland Security, working on all things border security.
Gotcha. Okay, yeah. I mean, everything you said is spot on, right? What's the value of national security? What's the value of actually having a border in a nation? And so whatever amount of money we got to spend on deportation is probably going to be worth it, and it's going to be way less than what we're going to spend in terms of cost for the housing and the care and the hits to the economy and all the other negatives that come from having an open border, let alone the danger of, you know, cartels and Hamas and all of the other things that come with having an open border. So, yeah, and on the family issue, I mean, here's the thing, bro. Even the idea for those people that think, oh, well, we shouldn't even deport the whole family together because those kids need to grow up in America where they can be. Listen, we cannot take the whole world. We cannot bring the children from around the entire world into America. What we can do best is be strong as America and then export the values and the systems that make other nations strong, just like we did with Japan after World War II. And when we sent Deming and all the others over there, it created an incredible economy for Japan and the nation that became as strong as it has because we exported American values. But this idea that we're going to import all of these children and all of these tens of millions of people and somehow be able to absorb that as a nation is just insane.
Also, Rick, the that was a CBS interview, and Tom Holman was the acting ICE director under Trump for about 18 months during the first year and a half of his presidency. But the CBS host questioning the cost, talking about how many billions it's going to cost a year to deport millions of illegal immigrants. Rick, where is the media when we're spending $100-200 billion on the war in Ukraine? Or right. We're spending right. $2 trillion on the so-called Inflation Reduction Act. Where's the media then when they want to talk about cost and financial stewardship?
Yeah, basically $200 billion for Ukraine to essentially have a border. That's really what it's about, right? They want to keep their nation and keep their border, so it's okay for us to pay for that, but not our own. And I got to admit, Walker, I did not know until, I don't know, earlier this year, maybe January of this year, was the first time that I learned about Eisenhower doing, I think it was 1.2 million that he deported. And so it's not like this is the first time in our history that we've done this. We've had to do this in the past. Now, granted, we need to do about 10 to 20 times what Eisenhower did.
Yeah.
But when people ask about the cost, you know, not only the financial side of this makes sense to do it that way, it'll save us way more than
absolutely.
That in the long run. But man, what's the value of your daughter being able to walk down the street and not be kidnapped, murdered, raped, or whatever else might happen?
Yep.
How many times have we seen when they do actually cover the stories, and you never see the major media cover these stories, but it's horrific crime that is happening. It's not just that illegals are coming across the border and you know, taking jobs or causing the housing market to go up and all that. It's the actual crime. It's the cost of life. It's the cost of your community no longer being safe. It's the, you know, the it's not just the dogs and cats in Springfield, Ohio, man. These are human beings that are you know, having their families ripped apart and lives destroyed. So how do you put a price tag on that?
Yeah, you can't. And this illegal immigration, Rick, the problem is that the media sensationalizes everything. And this process of deporting illegal immigrants, it doesn't have to be complicated. It doesn't have to be overly sophisticated. And it also doesn't have to be overly dramatic. And we know that the media, if President Trump gets in there and they really engage in any form of deportation, maybe not even mass deportations, the media is going to just, you know, scream bloody murder, call Trump Hitler again, like they've been doing pretty much day in, day out. But normal countries deport people who are in the country illegally. And Rick, this system, this process is going to take care of itself naturally. When you start enforcing E-Verify, making it where companies can't hire illegal immigrants, otherwise they'll be criminally charged. When you have ICE properly coordinating with local and state law enforcement when they arrest illegal immigrants, Rick, this stuff's going to take care of itself pretty naturally, pretty organically. You basically make it where being in our country illegally is not a good thing, and it's very hard to make it here. When you're in our country illegally, you're going to have some of these people, Rick, that self-deport.
That's right.
Because they can't find a job, so they'll just go back to Guatemala.
Yeah, man, you raise a really important issue that nobody talks about, and that is that once the law starts being enforced, there will be a lot of people that just leave on their own. And for those that are, you know, they try to paint these horrible images of, oh, what are you gonna do? Go door to door and round people up? Well, my answer to that is yes, and we're gonna start with the apartment complexes that have been taken over by Venezuelan gangs.
Yes.
Wouldn't you like us to go door to door and remove those gangs that are literally taking over apartments? And it's not just Colorado, man. It's right down the road from me in San Antonio, Texas.
Yep.
And you saw you probably talked about it on one of the days you were doing the program, but the whole idea that Martha, what's her name, would
Raditz.
Say to J.D. Vance, it's only a couple of apartment complexes. His
break.
Response was perfect, right? When he said, do you hear yourself? I think the correct number for apartment complexes run by Venezuelan gangs in America should be zero.
It's so true. Yeah, and that Rick, this is, there's a lot of things happening with this election. And we'll get into some predictions later this segment or the last. But this election, Rick, could be a slap in the face of mediocrity. This country, for far too long, has settled for less. We've made excuses for our leaders. We've accepted incompetence, and we've actually exported and mass-produced incompetence.
Yeah.
And it's about time. I mean, just to your point, that Martha Raddatz statement of, well, it's just one apartment complex, well, or a couple. Well, why is that okay? Like, why is that somehow the threshold where it's okay if a couple apartment complexes are ravaged by Venezuelan gangs? Like, why is that even good to begin with? We've lowered the bar so much where it doesn't take much to kind of get by in America from like a standard standpoint because we've just lowered the bar so much. I mean, this could really be a slap in the face to all the excuse makers and all the people who love settling for less in our country, we could do so much better.
We're almost, it's kind of like 50 years later, we're living out the Jimmy Carter malaise statement where he said America's best days are over and we just need to get used to that. And it's almost like his attitude finally came to fruition with the Biden administration. And so Biden and Harris were able to implement the Jimmy Carter malaise. and what you just described is it, man, the lowering of the bar where we're just going to accept all of this stuff. And you know, Lord willing, Trump will be like a Ronald Reagan. And his speeches the last month or two have sounded so much like Reagan in terms of the patriotism and the, you know, bringing America back and all of that. And so, you know, Lord willing, that's where we're headed. And I like the way you said it. It's basically a repudiation of the mediocrity and bringing back that American spirit, man. I mean, for me, it's a Texas spirit of, you know, that come and take it spirit from Gonzales, Texas. It's that westward expansion that, you know, Elon Musk almost embodies it with his whole, you know, taking back space and, you know, exploring again. And that's one reason these rallies have been such a success, I think, is because of the mix of people that the Trump team has been able to cobble together and bring together. So anyway, I think you say it in a great way. And it's also that whole cycle, right, of nations of the tough times make tough men, good times, soft men then lead to tough times. And we've just gotten soft. We've settled for less because we got soft. And I think there's been enough pain over the last few years that people are saying, okay, I don't want to go into the bad tough times. This little bit of tough times is enough. I'm ready to get back to the good times.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, this is this standard of American decline is a lot of people are getting fed up with it. And so, to your point, we need to raise the bar and we need leaders. You know, not everything is about leadership. I'm talking about, presidents come and go. But it is important, Rick, to have leaders who set the bar high or hold the bar high. Because that trickles down. I mean, whether that's it's right. our military and even the economy and the workforce and how people view the world, this is all very, very important. I mean, the bully pulpit of the presidency is a big deal. It's not the only factor, but it really is a big deal. And President Trump has the real opportunity, and he did this a lot in his first term, but to really revive kind of the blue collar spirit in America. I mean, this mentality that it's good, it's noble and virtuous to hold a good paying blue collar job. I mean, he wore the garbage vest, the sanitation worker vest the other day when he got off his airplane. He went to McDonald's and served burgers and French fries through the drive through. And we just got to really incentivize young people that working with your hands and working hard with your heart and with your mind and with your body is a good thing. God created us to work. And so we've got to really get off this twisted mindset that you have to be a doctor or a lawyer to be successful in America. Right. That's really put us behind. And it's made young people not want to hold blue-collar jobs because they think the only way to get by, so to speak, is to go to school for 8 years and get $500,000 in debt, only to not use that college degree.
And you even mentioned the bully pulpit and the influence that it can have. Even the other night, he talked about depression and the best way to fight depression and working hard. And you know, my mom always would say to me, "Hey, if you're down and you're depressed, go do something for somebody else. Go work hard. Go mow the lawn of that elderly couple down the street or whatever it might be." You know, and even little things like that, where you're actually encouraging the people in your constituents and your nation to do better, to work harder, to lift themselves up instead of feeding the victim mentality and encouraging them to stay in the doldrums or stay down or whatever it might be. It's just such a difference in mindset. So you're spot on, man. And I think there is a real opportunity. It's one reason people remember Ronald Reagan fondly, because he was, you know, really capable of doing that. And so we need it. We definitely need it. And I think it could be, you know, for such a time as this, which is weird because, right, Trump is, you know, he's like a Cyrus or a Nebuchadnezzar from the standpoint of, you know, he's not, doesn't line up with us on all of our faith values. But sure. Yet he's like a cultural Christian or something. You know, it's like he brings to the table the rhetoric that's necessary for our people to get to work and do the things that make a nation free.
Yeah, that's right. And, you know, to your point about Trump, this is an election, as many have been in the past. This is an election, or are we going to be moving the ball in the right direction, or are we not?
That's right.
That's a fact. And the broad implications that a Trump presidency can have for the evangelical movement, for evangelical Christianity, for policies that are biblical in nature, that honor God, the upside and the opportunity with a Trump presidency are very broad, very deep.
And the opposite is also true, right?
Yes.
There's such a disparity of how bad it could be on the other side of things for the Christian community.
Absolutely.
If he doesn't win.
Yeah, I mean, you get a Harris presidency, Christians are going to have no seat at the table. We're going to get radical judges. They're going to continue promoting Planned Parenthood and abortion on demand. I mean, the implications, folks, here is very broad, very deep. And the chasm between the two parties is also deep.
Massive.
And wide. So yeah. We've got to vote. The president isn't our pastor. He's not our spiritual leader. We got to have wise stewards of our nation. We'll be back in a few.
The feature-length documentary Culture Warrior, Don Wildman and the Battle for Decency, premiering November 11th, chronicles the life and ministry of Don Wildman. It takes you through the founding of the National Federation for Decency, what has become AFA. It's a call to stand firm for righteousness and shows how that resolve can make a huge difference in our world.
If we lose this cultural war, we're going to have a hedonistic, humanistic society.
Find out more and watch the trailer at culturewarrior.movie.
This is At the Core on American Family Radio with your host, Walker Wildman.
Welcome back to The Core. Walker Wildman here live with you. Rick Green also live on the program. It's your November 4th election, pre-election day show where we're trying to really, Rick, hopefully get people pumped up so they go out to the polls and vote, vote, vote.
Amen, brother. And by the way, I was listening to that that 1 minute from our friend Todd Starnes. I think I'm going to text him and say if anybody wants to get rid of those donuts, they can send them to me. So
you got it covered.
How can you imagine the things people object to these days?
Oh, I know. It's absurd.
It's like they're looking for a reason to be offended. I mean, they walk around going, okay, what can I be offended by? They just love being the, you know, offended.
And to your point, this precedent where school districts tell people they can't pray at graduation, you can't pray at the football game. I mean, this is absurd, Rick.
Yeah.
I mean, not only is it unconstitutional, but the fact that we need school administrators and school attorneys with some backbone. I mean, enough of this telling students that they can't pray. I mean, it's patently absurd.
Yeah, and you know, what happened to freedom of speech, freedom of religion, for all these things that, you know, freedom of conscience and the American way, right? The idea that you could actually express what you believe, and you know, in all these cases, it's not the school saying, "Hey, everybody, you have to do this." It's some kid gets elected by the other kids and gets up and says a prayer or says something that they believe. I mean, that should always be allowed, even if they're saying something that we disagree with. You know, we should respect that and believe in the arena of ideas. And you know, the whole Coach Kennedy case. I mean, think about it. This guy's literally just walking out to the middle of the field after the game, not taking anybody out there with him, going out there just to thank God for this opportunity to have a, you know, positive influence on these kids and that nobody got hurt. And we're going to take that all the way to the Supreme Court. And I'm glad they did, because now we got, you know, one of the best Supreme Court decisions of our lifetimes as a result of Coach Kennedy.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Rick, have you been keeping up with the polling and the early voting and all this stuff going on over the last few weeks?
Yeah, I try to keep it in perspective because I think the pollsters are even missing something. I'm even more optimistic than a lot of our friends right now, and it's cautiously optimistic, right?
Yeah.
Walker, like, we're not encouraging anybody to stay home at all. The opposite, you got to press the gas, and everybody tomorrow has to go vote.
Yeah.
But you know, I'm out there a lot, and almost every night with a different crowd across the country, and I have never in my life seen this kind of energy. And I know the overall like voting turnout is going to be only about 50%. It's not bigger than normal.
Yeah.
But the people that are turning out, I have never seen the church this energized in my lifetime anyway. And I've been doing this 30 years out there campaigning and doing stuff. So, you know, whether or not, you know, that I'm not saying that's going to be the outcome. I'm just saying from what I'm seeing in my bubble, in my, you know, echo chamber, if you will.
Yeah.
It's an unprecedented level of energy. Back to what we talked about in the first segment, I think because of those things, because people have just been pushed. They've been pushed around too much and they're done. And they're just saying, I'm not going to stay quiet. And it's catching on, man. The courage is catching on. The energy is catching on. So regardless of what happens with the presidential race, I think there's a movement right now that's beginning. And you know, let's say Trump wins tomorrow. Well, if he wins, then all that's going to do is provide air cover, basically, to try to stop the feds from infringing so much. But then we as citizens have to do our work in the community to take back ground, take back the nation, and restore godly principles. If Trump loses and Harris wins, then we're going to have to. It's going to be even more important for people to stay in the fight and fight both to prevent the feds from completely taking over our lives, but still fighting at the local level to provide, you know, basically safe haven. So I'd say all that to say, tomorrow night is not okay checkout time, regardless of which way it goes.
Right.
Tomorrow night is okay. Let's rest for a few days and then get right back into it because we've got a duty and responsibility to do this.
Yeah, that's right. And to your point, before we begin this last segment and talking about some of the numbers, you need to vote. It doesn't matter who
that's
you
right.
think is going to win. You need to
that's
vote
right.
because it's the right thing to do. So
that's right.
This is not a you know, sit back and get your popcorn and watch the show. This is a you need to get out and vote tomorrow if you haven't already. So that can't be emphasized enough. Vote, vote, vote. I'll be voting tomorrow as well before I come into work. But Rick, to continue this discussion, Republicans have been dominating in early voting compared to previous election cycles. And the numbers for this is a combination, to your point, we're not going to see the same turnout that we had in 2020. That was abnormally high because of the whole COVID mania and the mass mail-in voting that we saw that's not taking place, partially not taking place this cycle. So you're seeing total turnout actually down from 2020. But nonetheless, you're seeing some shift from Democrat to Republican in a lot of this early voting totals. I want to play this clip here. This is Democrat pollster, actually Democrat political pundit, actually admitting that the early voting numbers are pretty scary for the Democrats and Kamala Harris. Clip three.
What's their biggest concern right now if you're the Harris team?
Republicans do have an advantage in early vote numbers. When the early vote come in, it's going to look a little bit different than 2020, and that's scary.
All right, so that was a former Obama campaign manager on MSNBC. Jim Messina is his name. He helped with the Obama 2012 campaign. But Rick, his assessment is true because when you look at these early voting totals in several of these swing states, Republicans are leading in the early vote, which has never been done before. And that doesn't mean that there is the potential that election day voting could be down a little bit for Republicans
right.
compared to previous cycles. I mean, that's pretty much going to be a fact. But still, even if Republicans break even or do a little bit better on Election Day, Rick, compared to Democrats, if they go into Election Day leading in early voting, that's not good for Harris's campaign.
Yeah, man, I think the big question is, are we cannibalizing our vote, right?
Yeah.
Does it mean that the Republicans are basically getting all their votes out in early voting and therefore going to be really down on Election Day? Or do we kind of, you know, meet kind of a 50-50 on Election Day and therefore you see a big swing overall for Republicans? We don't know. We don't know. But it is highly unusual to see Republicans turning out in these numbers. And in some states like Pennsylvania, it's a massive difference compared to what it's been, you know, 4 years ago, 8 years ago. The trends are huge. And you remember, Walker, there was it 2020 or 2022 when even Trump said, you know, don't early vote, go on election day. And we were all saying, no, don't do that. That's not smart. That's going to let them know, you know, to shut down the machines on election day and cause problems. Or I've always been an early voter anyway, just because I'm afraid I'm, you know, what if you have a car wreck, or what if your kids are sick, or what if you're sick, or whatever it might be. So plus, when I was in office, I wanted to be shaking hands at the polls. So I would go early vote for myself and then be standing at the polls to shake hands or whatever on election day. So all that to say, I do think this trend is huge for Republicans. This is very, very good for the Republican side, very bad for the Democrat side. And it's across the board. It's really throughout the entire nation, but especially in those key states. And I keep mentioning Pennsylvania. Everybody's saying that's the bellwether, right? Whoever wins Pennsylvania is going to win the whole thing. I mean, there's possible scenarios for both sides without Pennsylvania, but very, very unlikely. So it is, the Pennsylvania is the state to watch. And I don't know if you noticed, man, but I mean, you talk about a rally every 20 minutes. I mean, it seemed like there was a rally somewhere in Pennsylvania for either side every day for the last week. It's been pretty remarkable how much both sides have invested there.
Yeah.
I wonder if that's also going to affect that Senate race there, you know, and then, of course, you got the Senate race in Virginia that could be affected. Virginia now seems to be in play. So I don't know, bro. Again, like I said earlier, cautiously optimistic, but based on those early voting numbers, I could see a landslide victory here. They're even saying that Trump is polling, you know, basically could win the popular vote, which, you know, that spells doom for the Democrats. They need to be ahead 2 or 3 points at least in the popular vote to have any chance at winning the Electoral College.
Yeah, and I don't know. I've heard that too, Rick, and it's possible, you know, but I'm leery on that. Just because of these, you know, California, New York, I mean, these are heavy pop centers, population centers. But it's possible. Did Reagan win the popular vote?
Yeah,
he won. I guess he had to.
In 84, of course, that was the big one that Mondale only won his home state. Yeah.
Yeah, as many states as Reagan won in 84, he had to win the popular vote.
Yeah.
Through math. But this is, Rick, here's kind of what I'm thinking, and I've got one more clip before we end the segment. But I'm optimistic. I'm not overly optimistic, though. And I think we have to understand, and I think the Trump campaign and the MAGA types are really kind of in an echo chamber at this juncture, and they're rejecting bad news and they're hyping up good news. And that's fine. I get it. That's politics. But we've got to remember, Rick, we live in a 50-50 country.
That's right.
I mean, yeah, Trump could win the electoral vote, you know, with 300-plus electoral college votes, and that's great for him considering, you know, the state of play. But we're still a 50-50 country. So remember how many people voted for Joe Biden. And I get it. There was fraud. There was shenanigans. There was mass mail-in voting. There was Zuckerberg bucks. So I understand all of that. But still, Biden was a terrible candidate. I mean, he spent the entire campaign in the basement, if you remember. I looked at that and said, there's no way this guy can win. Absolutely no way. And he did. Now, he narrowly won. I mean, Georgia, Wisconsin, Arizona, I mean, these were under 10,000 votes, and when you actually look at them, most of them were probably fraudulent votes. But nonetheless, he barely won those states, but he still won those states and won the popular vote. So there's just a lot of people in our country that are hardcore Democrats, and they don't care who's on the ballot. That's right. I think we need to bring that into realization, that we're still a country divided 50-50 down the line. And I'm thankful to God and thankful to our founding fathers that we had this thing called the Electoral College, because we would be up a creek without the Electoral College.
You're right, man. And another thing to remember is it's not even just a Republican-Democrat split. There's a worldview split in our country right now. We have a massive number of people in our nation that came through an education system that taught them that Marxism and socialism is good, and taught them that America is bad, and taught them that Christianity is bad. I mean, there's a huge chunk of this country that's all they've known. And so if they only get their news, and they're in their echo chamber, and they only get their news from a CNN and that sort of thing, of course they're going to believe those things. And so we've got a lot of work to do, no matter how this election turns out. This is one of those generational fights where you have to actually change back the education. And so actually believing in truth, teaching justice, teaching the American way once again. I mean, that's the work ahead of us. And that's one reason, you know, I'm still on the, hey, everybody go vote tomorrow, but already saying, okay, now remember, when this thing is over, when this election's over, no matter what, going into 2025, we need to be thinking generationally and doing the hard work to claw back ground in our communities for the long term for our kids and grandkids. That's why I said earlier, when you're, you know, when you make that donation to AFR and you shift that money from the government to an American Family Association, that type of donation is an investment in that generational fight, in that generational effort to bring back truth, justice, in the American way.
Amen. I want to play one more clip. This is former Philadelphia, Pennsylvania mayor. I think he's now a city councilman, but nonetheless, he's talking about the margin that Kamala Harris needs on election day in order to beat Trump, according to the early numbers, rural Pennsylvania numbers. Let's listen to clip four.
It is highly difficult to become president of the United States of America without winning Pennsylvania. And so the stakes are very, very high. The polling, every poll that I've seen shows it either very close, a toss-up, 2 points here, 2 points there. I think what you want to look for in Philadelphia, this is all about turnout. Some of us are old enough to remember efforts that were made to elect Wilson Good, first African-American mayor in Philadelphia 40 years ago. That was an all-out effort, and we'll need that similar kind of effort this time around, pretty much the same as 2008 with then-Senator Barack Obama. And so it is my general view that Vice President Harris needs to walk out of Philadelphia with a net 600,000 vote margin to offset what's going on in other parts of the Commonwealth.
So, Rick, that's a Democrat, by the way, former Philadelphia mayor. He's saying Kamala Harris is heavily underwater in Pennsylvania, especially rural Pennsylvania, and she's going to have Obama-like turnout in order to win Pennsylvania. Your thoughts?
Well, anyone that thinks Kamala Harris has the charisma or the momentum or the inspiration of Barack Obama has obviously not watched a press conference or a speech of Kamala Harris in the last in the last few months. So it's very, very unlikely. I think the only way that kind of turnout happens is anti-Trump, not pro-Harris, right? If they are able to gin up all this Hitler stuff and they, you know, the lies that they have told, the violence that they have stoked by creating all of these false narratives about Donald Trump is just, it's just evil, man. It's so wrong. And the way to say no to that is to show up and vote tomorrow and vote for a future in America that is patriotic and that you want your kids and grandkids to grow up in. And I think even people in Philadelphia get that.
Absolutely. Well, we're seeing I'm seeing similar numbers in Arizona. Some Democrats are heavily underwater in Arizona, which Trump lost in 2020. So it's going to be interesting to watch that as well. Both of those are battleground states. Hey, Rick, appreciate you joining me.
Enjoyed it, man.
Yeah, absolutely. We'll be in touch, and you'll be tomorrow you'll be on the program with the Core. So thanks for coming on, Rick.
You bet.
All right, folks, Rick Green, Walker Wildman, glad to be with you on this live edition of the Core. Tomorrow is Election Day. Vote, vote, vote.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.
Faith, family, freedom. American Family Radio.
All God asks of you is faithfulness. Headlines in USA Today, did you see it this morning? All the odds are against us. Faithfulness is the word.
There's a place for you on the battle line. Engage in the fight for America's families. Visit AFA.net and then take your position.